We're beginning lesson two this morning, and I titled this lesson, Learning to Work Together. Obviously, in a good marriage, that is crucial. Before we're married, we're single. We start off as one. And somehow, two have to become one. And I don't think I have to tell any of you this. That's not easy. That takes a certain dedication, a certain maturity. And I would say it's going to take a certain faith. We need to have the desire to follow God and learn how we can have two people, individual people, work together. I can't remember when I was single. I didn't have to explain where I was going. I didn't have to tell anybody how I was spending my money. I didn't have to let people know what I was doing at different times. That's what the single life was about. Now, I don't regret leaving the single life. But it's interesting as you go back, as you consider what the premise of our study, is that going from being one to two is not easy. And again, I would say, I've emphasized this already in our study, is that if you're a Christian, you already understand something about bending your will, about submitting. Men and women must learn to submit. You're Christian, it's a life of submission. And so, again, that would make it very easy for you to transition into marriage. And when you decided to marry, it was a free will decision. You chose marriage. Remember what was in your wedding vows?
She promised
you a man. That's right. That's true. That was in there. What else? No, I do sometimes with couples, you know, when they're getting ready to do the ceremony and they're nervous, and I just turn to the woman. I say, now look, when it comes to, you know, repeat after me, you just tell me what you want in there. They'll say it. You know, I mean, you take out the garbage, do the lawn, you just put it in there and they'll do it, you know. But, you know, when you said the marriage vows, there was commitments made. Commitments made unselfishly, serve your mate. Commitments made till death do you part. Commitments made to serve. Now, I know as Christians we understand this, but we live in a society where marriage vows are about like a McDonald's cup. You know, you keep all your McDonald's cups in the, you know, up there in the shelves, don't you? You wash them and keep them as collector's items, particularly the extra large cups that are plastic. Those are collector's items, right? You know, a lot of people treat their marriage and marriage vows like it's throwaway. It's an act. We do this because everybody does it. They don't consider it. In Malachi 2:14, here the Lord, under the Old Testament, the vows made between mates, he says this, yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. When you marry, it could easily be said, there are three partners to that marriage. There's you and your mate, and there's God. God is witness. So remember that. We believe in God. Now that gives us strong incentive to make our marriages work. That gives us strong incentive to be truthful. But it's so easy in our world today, you know, we're getting married. Oh, the wedding, all the planning, all the excitement. I'm not going to take away from that. But then, you know, the joke I told last week, you know, like getting married is like getting a telephone call at 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, you first get the ring and then you wake up, you know. And sometimes that's what happens. We get focused on the marriage ceremony and then here you are trying to live as one. But you want the desire, the benefits of two, and you end up having to deal with the issue of selfishness and learning. Okay, I know for you, you're familiar with this, but we need to talk about this because this is, to me, one of the key element in making it in marriage is learning to serve another and be glad to be a servant to another. And so, how do two become one? There are some people... There's some people, they want to negotiate. I've seen couples that they would say, I don't want the other woman, I don't want a man there. You know, I don't want to obey in there. Well, why not the husband say, I don't want to provide in there? You know, anyway, you know, there's a lot there, but that's not the way you do this here. It's not a matter of negotiation. It's a matter of trusting the Lord. How do two people become one? You're familiar with Matthew 19, where there were some questions made about divorce and the questions there, and remarriage is addressed in the context. But Jesus answered this question by appealing to the beginning. And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not men separate. You know, you look at that one flesh relationship, there is a passage where this is referred to, dealing with fornication. And some people say, well, the one flesh relationship is simply the physical relationship between a man and woman. And I don't believe that's all it is. It includes that when you're joined to a harlot, as the Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians, that, you know, that is a relationship that is very significant. That physical relationship is sin. It's sin against your own body. But the idea of becoming one flesh is more than just a physical relationship. I believe it involves the blending of spirits, the blending of hearts, of minds, the blending of purpose. And that's one reason why fornication, adultery, and marriage is so serious, is because it's a violation of God's purpose of one man, one woman for life. Okay, we've talked about this, but let's go ahead and talk about it again. Why is being a Christian really, for the most part, an essential for marriage? In order for marriage to work, what we've learned, why is being a Christian going to make a person much more likely to make their marriage work, to become one?
Well, like you said last week, putting God's purpose first makes the biggest difference in the world.
Yeah. We have to already be crucified. We already have to be, you know, we're dead, but Christ lives in me. We have to learn to carry a cross daily. We have to learn how to submit. Okay. And so again, then, that's it's easy. You know, see, a lot of people, they may become a Christian, and they have a very weak faith. And they're struggling with selfishness. But God wants us to take the self and yield it to Him. And so when we get into a marriage, we're already a servant. We're already thinking of others. We're already not, you know, we're no longer in the me, my type of attitude. And so, discipleship described, you know, we talked already, you got to deny yourself if you're going to become a Christian. Luke 9:23, he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. A real Christian learns how to sacrifice, learns how to put their will away. And that really is critical in marriage. Okay. Let's talk about what can happen from a negative standpoint. Let's take two people, and they're selfish. Two people, and they want to protect their rights. What happens? What, from a woman's perspective, what would she want? From a man's perspective, what would he want? What happens if you approach this relationship as, if you do what you ought to do, then I'll do this. We negotiate. We have a contractual agreement where we kind of check. It's kind of like a business arrangement. Okay, if I get my papers for this, then I'll give you this. And what happens when we have that kind of relationship?
I was thinking about something on your chart earlier in negotiations. A lot of couples nowadays, you're seeing go into the prenuptial agreements almost with the idea that, well, if this doesn't work out, but there's a selfishness involved, like, I'm going to protect my stuff from you. Mm-hmm. And they already are thinking of that before they even go into the marriage. It's like, I'm going to marry you, but I'm going to make sure you don't get any of my stuff. And we've known even Christians to do that, which is shocking to me, that they're already in that mindset of being separate, of not sharing.
Of course, I've been giving a lot of military examples here in our class, maybe for good reason, I don't know, but another illustration that I think was good along these areas, there was a general whose troops had landed and they were going to fight a battle, and he burned all the supply wagons. You know why he did that? There's going to be one way out of this thing. You know, you're not going back. You're going ahead. And it's interesting. I've heard it in history where generals have done that. And so basically, okay, this is it. Now, when you marry, this is it. One man, one woman for life. If you really trust God, you got to burn the wagons. In one case, burning the ships. And you go forward. I've heard it put this way. What if, can this marriage work? And they liken it to two people being on a desert island. You know, there they are. You got to make it work. You're on a desert island. You don't make it work, you die. And so again, that's sort of, from a physical standpoint, almost a pushing a person into something. But because we love the Lord, is why we say, this is going to work. We're going to make this marriage work. Now what happens though, spirit-wise, when you're trying to protect yourself from the other? Let me show you some verses. You got two wisdoms described in these verses. There's the wisdom from God, which is later. And then there's the wisdom from Satan. You want Satan to build your house? Then here's how you communicate. Here's how you deal with one another. Here is your motive and your attitude. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For when envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Let's talk about envy and self-seeking. How could that come up in a marriage? Envy and self-seeking. What's envy? You're wanting something, right? How about the husband that comes in? This is my money. My money. And the woman that may come into the marriage and she's received maybe an inheritance from, or let's say in the marriage they receive inheritance from the death of maybe their parents. This is my money. Is that the way we ought to do it in marriage? Should you have your money and I have my money? One at a time. No. Really? And I don't know. I may step on some minefields as I go teaching this class. I never know what some of the things, but really, you are together. You are one. The two are becoming one. As you bring money in from your work, it's not your money. It's y'all, both of your money. You're working together as a team. It's not that the husband's not the head. Yes, he's the head. But you are a team. And you end up with envy and self-seeking, you're going to end up with trouble. And this is the heart of why marriages fail. Right here, Satan's wisdom is being applied. Now notice the other wisdom. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure. What does that mean? It's first pure. You want godly wisdom, first pure.
There's no defilement. There's no alternative agenda. It's specifically for God's purpose.
Yes, for God's purposes. God's will is first. It's right. It's right. It's sincere. It's true. It's genuine. Then notice what happens. Then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy. What do you mean full of mercy? Do we need mercy in marriage? Yeah, I need my mate to give me what I need, not what I deserve. And my mate needs that. We need lots of mercy because we've got our warts and we've got our struggles. And, if somebody puts a magnifying glass on me, they can find a lot of things that, man, it's kind of tough to deal with. Good fruits without partiality, without hypocrisy. What's hypocrisy? You're pretending. You're playing a game. You're hiding. So you don't have a dual life. You want to be totally open to your mate. I know this is not talking about marriage, but let me tell you this right here. If I did nothing else, but we could get this into the hearts of people in marriage, then everything's going to be okay. Right here. You know, you go back to life situations I've seen. It has not been an uncommon thing for somebody to lead in services, lead in prayer, to be teaching Bible classes, to be sitting in the pew, maybe not leading, and man, they're just the greatest person in the world. And something completely different be going on at home. Do you know how sometimes your first indication you get, now this is getting, you can't probably figure out where I'm going here, but if somebody's been in the church for many years with children, and they've had hypocrisy in their home, they've had a different situation in their home than what you see at services, do you know what one of the early indicators there's a problem? There's a lot. What's one of the early indicators that you've observed? I've got some opinions. It's not necessarily right or wrong. Walker, you?
You probably see the children.
You do, the children. Sometimes I call those the canary in the coal mine. You know, that's the canary in the coal mine is when there's poisonous gas, you'll see it affect the children, and you see that. And sometimes you don't see it till they leave the home, and then they say, "You don't know what kind of home I had." And buddy, as soon as I could get out of there, I was going to get out of there. And that's really way down the line when you try to fix something like that. You can't have the smiley face and be at services and live like the devil at home. You go back to Malachi and you develop this hope. Notice the person here in Malachi that God's talking about. Were they religious? Look at verse 13. And this is the second thing you do. You cover the altar of the Lord with tears. Oh, I'm sad. Oh. And just cried, filling the altar with tears. Okay. You cover the altar of the Lord with tears, weeping and crying, so he does not regard the offering anymore. Now, wait just a minute. Didn't he repent? No, not here. Nor receive it with goodwill from your hands. You say, for what reason? Why aren't you accepting my repentance? Why aren't you accepting my worship? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. But he did not make them one, here's the two become one, having a remnant of the Spirit. And why one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously with the wife of his youth. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce, for it covers one's garment with violence, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit, that you do not deal treacherously. Hypocrites in the Old Testament, hypocrites in the New Testament. Verse 17, you have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet you say, in what way have we wearied him? And that you say that everyone who does evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delights in them. Or where is the God of justice? So one of the problems we do face in the church sometimes, we'll have people that play the game, but at home there's a whole different picture. And I don't know always how we can help that. Let it not be in your home. And I guess that's what we can talk about. We can deal with us. Don't you let situations develop in your home where you have that kind of poison. Now, the last section this morning, this will be interesting and fun, I think, enjoyable and teachable. You haven't had time to read the article, obviously. I didn't give you the outline until this morning. But I want to analyze the article and by looking at some of the points in it, dealing with maturity. Really, if there's something that is going to derail the marriage between two Christians, it's going to be because they don't apply God's will. And another way of putting this would be they lack maturity. Now, you know, maturity is something you can develop. You can gain. But let's talk about children, for instance. Okay, let's talk about characteristics of children. Children naturally should be immature. You know, they have to be developed and taught and programmed. What's characteristic of immature children? What are some of the things they do or don't do?
They don't share.
Huh?
They don't share.
Mine! It's mine. Okay, I mean, it's interesting. We could laugh at children and see it, but then sometimes adults, you go, ooh, you know, there's some similarities here. So there's selfish attitudes and behavior. Okay, what's more? I know we had, what's the more characteristic? You don't have to follow my point outline. Some other characteristics of immaturity.
They live for the here and now.
What's that?
They live for the here and now.
Of course. They're children. They're here and now. Fun. That's what we do. I'm bored. What can I do? Look at that mother on the store. Look at this. Oh, I love to go to the toy store. Oh, because I knew that what you had to find something to beg for. And man, when you got it, it was fun till you got home, played with it for an hour or two, then it was done. And so, you know, a lot of adults live that way. They live for the here and now. What's some more characteristics of immaturity?
They reject authority when it doesn't suit them.
That's right. You're mean. And I'll tell you one of the compliments. Every time that Emily wanted to talk with me about Yvette, I don't know if she's talked to Yvette about Emily, about me too. But Emily, you know, Mama's mean. You know, she'll get my response. You know, you're really going to appreciate that. I'm glad she's mean. And really, you know, we want to have a mean mommy and a mean daddy. That's what we want to be. It's not, you know, but you know, she at time, you know, you keep talking to them, they'll get it. I said, one day you're going to be a mean mommy. No, I'm not. I'm not going to be like my mother. Oh, yeah, you will. It'll be good. We'll be proud of you for it. Lots of more characteristics of children. I can go over our bullet list in gratitude. That's one thing. It takes time, maturity. But, you know, the younger they are, they get, oh, it's great, but, you know, thank you. Sometimes not, yes.
I was listening to John Tesh this morning while I was getting ready, and they were talking about letting your mate know that you appreciate things that they do, whether it's just talking around the house or just the little things that you could do for one another to help. A lot of times we don't say, thank you, and I appreciate that.
But that doesn't apply when you get a call in the morning. We got a showing at 11:30, right? That doesn't apply. We've got to get to. No, that's good. I was too frantic. So anyway, that's good. Okay, all right. All right. Demanding to have their own way. I want this. I loved how Emily, when she was a toddler, I need this. You know, be something. Mama, I need this. And so that's fun to see that. But see, when it comes in adults, it's not too funny, is it? No responsibility, no sense of responsibility and obligation. I know that, you know, our kids were an exception. You know, our kids, without us ever having to tell them, they always cleaned up their toys and slipped them up. No, ours didn't come that way. And so again, you know, thinking about it, but that's a maturity thing. Kids, this is natural with kids. And, of course, how they react to conflicts and problems. Got a funny video of Stephen and Nathan as toddlers. I had to find it some way. And Stephen's just talking. Nathan doesn't get to talk. And finally, at one point, he hears bang, just pops Stephen. It's a mid-camera video. Nathan! Anyway, so it's interesting to watch, you know. And it's funny as kids, you know, to see some of that. But it's not to be fun. You know, one of the keys, really, in marriage, it's like in any relationship, maturity is you don't know a person until what? Let's say you're infatuated. You're in love. Nothing wrong with that. But how do you really get to know a person?
I don't know what problems.
That's right. You need to have some disagreements. And you need to have some issues to work through. And you find out about them. And that's good in dating. And certainly in marriage, you've got to figure that out. And of course, poor judgment is another characteristic of immaturity. And one last thing, they think that happiness comes without giving. As a kid, getting, you know, I love to accumulate the toy arsenal, you know. I love to do that. Okay.
I think I heard Debbie say something earlier. I guess it went under selfishness, but than that. You're the center of your right hand. When you're a child, you're like this. You think that you're the center of your hand.
Say that again.
When you're a child, you think like you're the center of everything.
Of course. And you know what? Some parents can contribute to that mightily. One of the worst things I've seen in parents is where they're struggling. I've seen parents that struggle with a problem, maybe depression, maybe other issues. They can't be there as much for their children, and they feel guilty about it. And you know what sometimes they do? They buy them things. Does that help the child? No. Our children don't need things. They need us. They don't need things. They need to learn maturity. They're not the center of the universe. And I've seen some wonderful, godly men, men that are well known in their preaching, that made that mistake with their children, and they ended up with monsters. And so it's very important in our raising children. We're not really necessarily right now going to talk about raising children. We're really going to talk about how adults act as children. Now let's talk about a marriage. How will maturity respond in a marriage? We've already talked about some things. We talked about independence, how the two become one. I think we covered that point. I mean, you could look at the outline here. I think there's some points. I pull from page 6 there. But notice, we need to talk about this. Yeah, we need to talk about this. Okay. In-laws and outlaws. You know, it's interesting when we talk about relatives, our parents, that can be a huge problem. Sometimes parents of children who are married don't realize the negative influence they can create. But I'll just read some things from the article here. It says, some young married men and women are still psychologically dependent upon their parents. Husbands who are still mama's boys who can't cut the apron strings, and wives who are still daddy's girls who won't build their own homes without their husbands. What does that do to a marriage? What happens, for instance, if you as the wife wanted to go a certain direction, the husband talked to you about a certain decision or direction, but then the husband's parents talked to them and he did what the parents said, rather than consulting with you and making the decision between the two of you? What problems does that create?
Trust between the two of
them. Right. Who do you love more? I'm telling you, in your marriage, you've got to cut the apron strings, and it's you and your mate working together. And if your mate feels like you're more loyal to your parents than to them, that creates a problem in the marriage. And that's not that we don't have a relationship with our parents, and that's an important relationship. But there's some people make terrible decisions in that area. An extreme example, and I hope you don't mind using the illustration of what your mother went through, but Yvette's dad, wonderful man, a man I admire, would love to be like him in my life. But one of the mistakes they made is when they first got married, they moved into an apartment right over his parents. They were upstairs and the parents were downstairs. And when it came time where the parents thought they ought to get up, they'd take the broom handle and hit on the ceiling. The dad's mother would come in at times when Yvette's mother was gone and rearrange furniture the way she liked it. You know, so you, I mean, that may be an extreme, but you know, I will tell you, well, that created problems. That were very serious over time. And so I remember one young couple up in Suffolk, they moved to a trailer in the front yard of the boy's parents' house. Oh, you know, that sometimes you may have to do that. And in the days we're living in now, we may have to have families all living together real close. But, you know, as the parent whose child is being married, I need to really understand the change of relationship. And that's one thing. Let me tell you one thing about Yvette's mother. She was never intrusive in our relationship. She understood that point. and showed great respect and did quite well there. And so again, that's one area you might not think about, but we're to be independent. You know, one of the things we're facing, and we got some of our college students getting married, and that's good. But what if a college student gets married but they can't provide for themselves and they have to depend on home? That raises some questions for me. I think that you need to be married and be able to provide for your home. And if you can't be there yet, you may not all get married. Now, I think everybody I talk to is okay there. So I'm not telling you, I know of a problem and telling you of a problem. So I want you to know that. If I'm stepping on something, I'm not meaning to. But there needs to be independence. And we've already covered these verses. Okay? There needs to be a mature attitude towards sex. Is that a bell? Okay. And here, basically, it's just like anything else within the marriage, there needs to be communication. We're individuals. We have needs. And here, it's so important that we not let Hollywood try to dictate to us how things are, because Hollywood does not depict reality. Men and women are not dogs and cats and act as animals. We are people with needs, psychological needs. It's the love that should be underlying this, and it's not simply just a physical act. And so you read verses, and I'm just going to skip down to Hebrews 13:4, but you can read these other verses that talk about the communication, not depriving one another, talking about the enjoyment and the care of this relationship in Proverbs 5. But in Hebrews 13:4 it says, marriage is honorable among all the men undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. And one of the things here, when we talk about this area, it's just like a lot of areas in marriage, is that, you know, we change with time. And our needs change with time. And it's important that, you know, you got to have a constant communication. And so again, we're all different. What our needs are different. And I think that's important to recognize. The other area is to be able to seek your companion's happiness as diligently as you seek your own. Now, really, it's talking about being head. My wife's not happy. My problem. And I want to find out if I can help it. Sometimes I can't help it. It may be just an issue that, you know, I can give support to. Sometimes it may be that's what is needed, is I give support. But if there are problems in the home, then I'm going to look to that. And I can't change another person against their will. But as a husband, I'm going to look that, okay, I'm going to step up, and this is going to be part of what I need to do and to take care of. And the wife as well. You know, we want to, you know, we're no longer one, we're two. And you see, who do we have an example? What's the greatest example we have of someone who sought the good of another? And still does, constantly does, always seeking good of another. Who's the greatest example of that in Scripture? Jesus Christ. And that's why you have passages relating to the marriage relationship being likened to Christ. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. So husbands often love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. And that's true. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it just as the Lord does the church. So when you give to your mate, you know who gets from that? I mean, if you're trying to talk from a purely selfish standpoint, if you're unselfish, guess what happens? You get. You know? You do. And that's how the marriage relationship becomes very powerful. Let me know when that second bell's rung. Is it wrong? It's wrong. Okay, I didn't know. You got to help me. I'm hard of hearing. I used to tell people I was hard of hearing at advanced frequencies, but now it's broad, you know. Okay, we'll do discussion next week.